The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is the 9th of June, 2016, and we are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com. Also, he's a regular on here every month, super guy. Unleash your strength with relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome, organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. Steven is also a monthly guest here, Steven Santangelo. Contact him at primalcreations@aol.com. Facebook, STEPHEN, period, SANTANGELO, period, 75, and tell him we sent you. Also, too, Atomic Athletic, Roger LaPointe is on here every month, too. And this month, he is selling the Bull Moose Rotating Thick Bar at a sale price. It's normally $329. You get it for $269 up to June 13th is the cutoff date. I've got one here. It's a smoking bar. Its length is 84 7/16, and it weighs 58 pounds. And for anybody that's had bicep injuries, myself included, sometimes using a pollen bars can they kind of bind up on me once in a while. That's the best way to describe it, where I don't know if it's from the surgery on the arm or what. I mean, everything feels fine, but at times it almost feels like it sticks a little bit. And I don't want to screw around with biceps at all. This is the antidote to what I need. So go out to atomicathletic.com, check it out, tell Roger we sent you. Also, too, on FiorelloBarbellCo.com, the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. It's a free ebook, just download, as we talk about all the time. Commit and, you know, just put it into action and use some perseverance after that, and away you go. That's on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Also, our two biggest products to date is Strength Times Power Equals Success in the Winner's Circle. If you like what we talk about here, everything is done right behind my office here at the house in a one-car garage. It's loaded with everything. A 95-foot driveway. The last third is all stones and tires. It's an awesome, awesome thing to do. No one writes our content, and you know how we feel about all that. Well, today, this is what I love about doing this show when we get new people on here. I mean, in my opinion, and I've heard it from a lot of other people, we've got the best crew out there. I mean, we have the best, and we're going to even increase it bigger here. Today, we have a gentleman from Ireland named Adrian O'Brien. And I want to give you a little bit about this gentleman, and he's got quite a resume here. Number one, his website is O'Brien, www.obrien.fitness, and I'm going to just read it verbatim right off his site. This gentleman has a diploma in athletic strength and conditioning. He has a diploma in personal training. He's a precision nutrition level 1 IKFF certified. Now, I'm sure you know Steve Cotter, obviously, who's a regular on here too. Olympic lifting, he's an instructor with that, and I'm going to let him come in and give the whole deal on him. Big Mace guy, friend of Rick Brown's, who was just on here and did a show with us, and we can get into all this stuff. But, you know, this is what we love here, and I can't welcome this gentleman more. Adrian, welcome to Motivation Muscle, sir.
Eric, thank you. Thank you for having me, and thanks for the nice bio. Cheers, my friend.
I hope that was good. Give anybody anything you would like to talk about with yourself, and obviously if you have any other websites, obviously give this again, and we're just going to move into it. As I told Adrian, we went back and forth yesterday. This is his first time on, and we're going to be very happy to get him back, and I know that sounds cocky. That's the way we are here. So we like to build the foundation for our family of listeners here, and it's very important because for those who don't know this gentleman, now he's going to be known here by a lot of people in the States. So take it away, sir.
Excellent. Okay, Eric, I suppose to start off, in a general, broader context, I'm a family man. I'm a father of three young boys and a fantastic, supporting and loving wife. And that's my first job and that's my first role in life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so secondly, to get the social media stuff out first, I'm as you said, my website is O'Brien.fitness. I'm on Instagram at TeamOBF, which is my gym, which is my crew, my second family, so to speak. And on Facebook, you'll get me at O'Brien Fitness and Performance. I guess from a coaching standpoint, I'm very much a values-based coach. And what I mean by that is, like, I like to coach and live through a certain set of core values of honesty and gratitude, respect, self-development. I think it's imperative as coaches that we know our core values, and knowing what matters to us most gives us a level of self-awareness when we're coaching and working with people.
I got to tell you, it's already been a pleasure to talk to you just with that there. I think that you nailed it. You know, there's more to physical culture than just going in and lifting weights or stones or kettlebells or whatever you want to do. There are standards you need to live by, and when you walk out those gym doors, you conduct yourself with those standards. And this is something, Adrian, I put out all the time, that weightlifting to me has been, besides my mother and father and family, has been the direct point of where I am today, because I didn't know at the time when I started with a sand weights and a wooden bench that I'd be where I am right now. But it was a progression where I loved the stuff so much and was so passionate about it that not only did I build the physical strength, which I was blessed with, but I learned how to mentally teach myself how to behave and how to become a better man. And to me, this is great what we do. But when we walk out the doors, that's even more important, because what I see here, especially in the United States now, is a very weakened people. Especially with kids, I train kids, you know, for basketball, football, et cetera, like that. A lot of them just do, you know, and they come from good homes too, and they can't say, well, they've been living the rough life. The problem is they've been living too soft of a life. And when life gets to them or they don't get what they want, they initially just want to drop out. So when you talk about the family, the standards, the what you want to build and incorporate, you know, internally is vital to everything you do, I applaud you. I really do. I think that's when I heard you say that, I mean, you don't hear – I know how everybody feels here, but when you come out initially and nail that right to the wall, kudos to you, my friend.
Yeah, I always start with that because, you know, the hardest thread program you'll ever have in life is being a father and being a husband. That's the toughest program you will ever have. It's the most important one as well. It's the most valuable one. And I firmly believe that whatever you do as a person, that if it doesn't make you a better person, then you shouldn't do it. So, I really believe that if your job does not make you a better person, if the activity you partake in, if the sport you play does not make you a better person, then you shouldn't do it. And I suppose to quote, you know, I don't know if you've read Legacy, which is James Kerr's book.
Yep.
You know, it just kind of, it delves into the life of the All Blacks and the culture that they have created as a team, as a group. And one of the quotes from that book and one of the philosophies that the All Blacks rugby team have is that better people make better All Blacks. And I think that's a really powerful statement and a really powerful quote. And I think that if a world-class team and group of individuals like the All Blacks live by that, then I think that that's a mantra that we could all successfully live by as well.
Oh, I agree. Let me ask you this, and then we're going to move right into your history too. Why have we kind of fallen on the sword in a lot of ways? Why are people doing things they don't like? Is it the money factor? Because I know how it is over here. People dig themselves into big holes. Obviously, the mother is out of the house now. The kids, you know, we give them every device, keep them kind of occupied, and yet. You see all kinds of turmoil and trouble all over the place. And what do you think's happened? I mean, has the value system that we talked about here just a little bit ago, Has a lot of it gone to the wayside? And are the kids now, you know, I see a lot of stuff when I'm out, even like at football games and things like that. The kids seem more like the parents than the parents. And what's your take on that? I mean, what do you see over in Ireland, like when you look at the U.S. or where you are right now?
Yeah, I suppose like it's a broad question, and everything is a question of values, and it comes down to what you appreciate in life, and what you appreciates, if that makes sense. And I think that,
you're right.
Yeah, I think that once you define your core values, and the real, I think the real problem with values is, you know, you can just throw out five or six values like honesty and commitment, and they're just generic words.
Correct.
But you they have to become living values. They have to become something that you don't just try to live through, but you also try and coach through. You try to be a parent through, that you try to pass on to your kids and pass on to the people you're in contact with. And I think that as coaches, we have an exceptional opportunity to help people get in touch with the core values, you know, and to give people that sense of clarity and that sense of purpose. And I think that, I know you probably spoke in a broader context, I really do think that, you know, the most valuable assets that we do have in life come for free. You know, our parents, our relationships, our beliefs, our thoughts, our intentions. And these assets are priceless. And I think the bigger problem is that we tend to really put value on the materialistic things, the things that in the long scale of things are not really that valuable in the long term. Like, you know, we speak about strength training. Like, you can't buy a 250 kg deadlift, or you can't buy a muscle up. These things are a signature of perseverance. They come through hard work, and you won't get them unless you live by certain values of commitment and, you know, honesty and so forth. And I think that in this world of instant gratification, right, people, you know, are expecting results yesterday, you know, and I think it comes through from, even in the health and fitness world, it comes from the fact that we treat change as an event. You know, like take the Biggest Loser, you know, take all these 6 weeks, you know, body transformations. They change, or they treat change as an event, but change isn't an event. Change is a process. It's a process that, you know, is going to lead you to an outcome, you know. And I think that this need for instant gratification has left the whole world feeling like crap, basically, you know. And I think that seeing a challenge and trying to overcome it is a habit that we should try to adopt, you know, as opposed to seeing the shortcut and seeing the short way and looking for the quick fix all the time. And you know, I think that when we do try to encourage, as coaches, try to encourage our clients to kind of adopt that mindset, then I think that you tie that in with a set of core values, then I think we're moving in the right direction, and we're definitely moving in a direction that is against the fitness industry norm, really.
No, I agree, and you know what, the 90-day fixes, and this is what a lot of people understand, these are models or professional athletes that, you know, are out of their whatever genre they're in, and we'll make this quick, because I really want to hit on you quick, but the problem is, it's not realistic, and I get plenty of them here, and totally disappointed, and you try to explain to them, hey, look, this is going to be your lifestyle forever if you're really going to commit to doing this stuff and understand the value of it, the standards of it. Now, these are things most people, even adults, I'm sure you run into this, they have no clue to. And so you're taking a kid and you're trying to mold these kids. You know, I give them books to read. One of the ones I start here with everybody, doesn't matter if they're an adult, I have them read Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
I think that was a catalyst for everybody we see out here. And the book, I think, was written in the 30s. It doesn't matter. And everybody would say, well, it's only about money. I said, no, it's not only about money. It's a value system that you use with money, if that's what you so choose. But it's a value system you build with inside you. And they're looking at me like, inside you? I said, don't you understand, anything that is externally shown on you, how you behave, how you look, how you act, how you conduct yourself, how you treat people, is all what's going on inside of you. Now, a lot have bought in. We've had a lot of success. Obviously, there's others I've let go, because I'm a big believer in this, Adrian. Your atmosphere is very conducive to what you're going to, you know, produce here. And people say, well, they're not here. I said, technically, I believe everyone's here in spirit. And what I see here is when I've got a malcontent or somebody that is speaking verbally horribly about themselves or the world, I'll go with it for a little while, but it will never be the first or the last time I don't cut somebody loose, because I'm looking as the family as a whole, and you want to dedicate yourself to people and help people, but there are some cases where some of the stuff has to go. You know, and I'll make this quick, like even with business here. Now, I've been up for almost 3 years, lost a very high-paying job, wasn't going to go back into the field anymore, decided to go after my dream. Now, I didn't start one business. I started two, which most people just shake their head at. What I found more than anything, friends and family, who I don't speak to anymore, were really down on everything I was doing. You know, what if you fail? How are you going to do this? You don't have a lot of money. Well, here we are today with a podcast show that the majority of people thought I was nuts, and I pulled it off. And I had a programming degree, luckily. It made things very easy. Not perfectly easy, but I've always had to research everything I do. So I used everything I learned in that field, which really is still profiting from, even though I'm not in it anymore, to be able to pull this whole thing off. So when people come to me and say different things, this, this, and this, I kind of look at them like and just shake my head, because I said, if you want to do something big and you want goals or you want businesses, you know, you better be ready to take it on the chin a billion times, because the joke around here is this: I've been on one knee so many times, it's a wonder I have a kneecap left on my right leg. Okay, right? So so the whole thing with this is, and I'll make this quick too, I look at life in a lot of different ways. I had a brother, Jimmy, who had muscular dystrophy, okay? So I watched my brother basically go from walking to the very end where he was in a wheelchair. But we never treated him any different than any other of the kids. He was matriculated in regular schools. There's nothing wrong with him mentally. And I have just a different twist on it, because as a young boy, when you have a good, conducive, tight family knit like that, because everybody was in this, I saw things that most people don't see, and I saw things with a lot of suffering, also a lot of laughter, a lot of pain. So when people come and tell me about these little things, I kind of look at them like, come on, will you? And it's like, and they look at me like, well, you're being unfeeling. I'm like, it isn't unfeeling, but I've seen things that you probably would never cope with, and it's like I cope with things different because I come from a different background. But go ahead, take it. Anything you want to comment on with that? Go ahead.
Yeah, like, you know, I think, like, touching on the failure thing, I think that, you know, this fear of failure is nearly a learned behavior, and it's a societal thing as well, you know. I think that it's something that in the gym we embrace. You know, if you're not failing, then you're not growing and you're not developing. So it's really important that you have this mindset of being open to fail, and that applies to business, that applies to training, that applies to life, you know. And I think that it ties back into the earlier point I made of, you know, this instant gratification. People fear that, you know, up until the age of maybe 10 or 11, and we fail so many times with everything we do, from learning to talk, learning to walk, learning to read, learning to write. But possibly from about 11 and 12 onwards, we start to become way more aware of failing, and we start to develop this fear of failing, because I do think it is a learned behavior. And by the time we hit 19, 20, most people have finished developing. You know, they finished developing from an academic standpoint, they finish developing from a physical standpoint, and then they cocoon themselves into this little box of, you know, I'm not going to fail, I have this fear of failure, if I fail, it's a bad thing, and then from there on, they're just stagnant for the rest of their lives. And I think that that mindset, that concept, is building a world of self-limitation, you know. And what I'm trying to create with OBF and with my gym is just a world of self-development, of completely opening up. Like, you know, we do different, you know, juggling blocks, we do different skill games that encourage failure, because it's all part of the growth process. And even in business, when I started out first, you know, I think that I had two young kids, I had quite a big mortgage, and I decided to make the break and go on my own and try and open a gym. And it was a massive risk for me to take financially, was a massive risk for my family because, you know, I'm the only income earner. You know, I'm in a position where I was providing for everyone, and I had failed with so many different things up to that point. And I think that, you know, in a broader context with health and fitness, I had nearly over-diversified. I had tried to do so many different things. And then I narrowed my niche into what I felt movement / fitness / strength training should be like. And I told people what I believed. And I think people who believed what I believed started to come towards me and gravitate towards me. And that was really the genesis and the birth of this Team OBF, which is the group of people I have in the gym. And from that point on, I started to gather people around me who had the same mindset as I had. And all of a sudden, things started to grow. And I think that, you know, had I feared failure in the first place, I probably would have never taken that step to go forward.
Exactly. And you know something, you hit it right there. It's like what you put out there, you're going to get coming back to you. And that's what I always say, too. The people that you needed to come into your life came in, and it accentuated more what you were doing, and you made it. And I'm sure I'm probably at that point where you were right way back when, because right now I feel we are right on the curve where we're going to turn the corner. We're that close now, and this is usually the point where people bail because they're not seeing anything. They're not seeing anything. And I want to tell everybody out there this. Even though you're not seeing it in front of your face, things are happening around you all the time. All you have to do is just keep moving it, keep going, keep going. If you're passionate and you believe in what you're doing and you're putting out a superior product, nothing's going to ever stop you, and that's the way it is. This is what I could talk to you about this all day. I mean, I love all the mental stuff, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But let's talk about you, Adrian. You know, this is what I like to ask the guys especially. I ask the women who come on here too, because so many of us love comics and love the big superheroes. As a young boy, how did you start getting into physical culture? Was it comic books? Was it like my favorite, my hero that made me want to train was the Incredible Hulk, all right?
Yeah.
And still is to this day. What got you initially into this? Was it a mentor, family, what?
Yeah, no, I think for me personally, like sport always came pretty natural to me, whereas academic life didn't, you know. Yeah, I found that when I was in what we would have as national school, which from the ages of maybe 10 to, you know, 13, I found that I always struggled academically in school, but I always, you know, really flourished when it came to sports and physical culture and you know. Over here, I played a multiple amount of sports. So I'd done athletics, which is track and field in the States. I played rugby, soccer, and I boxed for a good number of years, and I played GAA. So have you ever heard of GAA, hurling and football?
No, I never have.
All right, so in Ireland, we have a sport called, we have an organization called the GAA, so it's the Gaelic Athletic Association.
And okay.
Within that, you have Gaelic hurling and Gaelic football. Okay, so there are two traditional games that are played in Ireland, but they're also played in the States. So in America, there would be a lot of GAA teams as well, and that's very strong in Ireland. You know, it's our national sport, and it's really, really strong. And it's still an amateur sport, even though guys who play with their county teams would play at a pretty high level and would essentially be it'd be as good as full time athletes now at this stage. But they're still amateur. No one gets paid. They still hold down day jobs. But I would have played a lot of GAA as well. Then at the age of about 17, 18, I was picked for a couple of representative rugby teams, and I gravitated towards rugby, and that's where I stayed for a good number of years. And with rugby, it kind of goes hand in hand with strength training and barbell training, and that's where I was first introduced to strength training.
Okay.
I continued to box, and I continued playing rugby until about 2007, 2008, at a reasonably high level. And I retired at 2008, and I just started really focusing on calisthenics, kettlebell training, bodyweight training. I started to do some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I trained some BJJ for a number of years, competed in some tournaments. And at that point, I realized that my movement skills were really poor. When I went on my back and I was trying to, you know, roll on my shoulders and do forward tumbles, and I was just lost. After coming from a game where it was high impact rugby, to being on my back and trying to coordinate my body. And then I started to look down more gymnastic routes, more movement-based training, and I started to follow some programs there. And I think that what I do now is a kind of a mix of all that put together. So I wouldn't say that. I'd say I even though I don't do CrossFit, I cross-train quite a lot now at this stage. You know, so that was my introduction, and that's where I am with how I train at the moment.
Especially coming up too, I mean, especially all over the place with athletes and stuff. Were there any athletes at the point, you know, say in like your teens and stuff that people would know about that you admired?
Oh
that,
yeah, yeah. Mike Tyson was my biggest idol when I
really.
When I was a teenager, Mike Tyson to me was the man. You know, I thought it from an athletic standpoint. I thought he was a specimen. I'd be quite short and quite broad, so I guess I might have had the same kind of build, obviously on a way smaller scale, but I wasn't a long, lean kind of a guy. I was very short, short limbs, like Tyson. I liked boxing, and I really respected Mike Tyson as an athlete. I thought he would have really been someone that I would have looked up to an awful lot at the time.
Well, you would have loved living where I do, because that's where he fought. He lived in Catskill, which isn't far from where I am in New York, and he was a regular. He used to be in Albany quite a bit. That guy was built, man. There's no doubt about it. But you know what killed him? He got, you know, once Jacobs died and Caton, and he decided to defect. It was a pretty sad end to what he was. I mean, he was devastating inside, too. I mean, man, oh, man. It was like, you know, he'd just hit you with a shot, and it'd be the next thing you know, the guy's on the ground there. You know what I want to ask you, being that you are a boxer, and obviously you've got a lot of, I'm sure, information stored up. And I love all that stuff. My brother's a big, big boxing connoisseur. As we know, Muhammad Ali died the other day.
Yeah, very sad. And, we lost a great man.
Yeah, I mean, and you know something? I think now the more I read about him and stuff, it seemed like, you know, everybody's always, well, he liked to fight, but he fought too long. And obviously, I didn't know this was going on for, like, the last 40 years either. And, you know, I think now the more and more I read and listen, it sounded like when he was fighting constantly into his later years, when most guys were retiring, it sounded like he was having a lot of financial problems. And I get the feeling that he had the box to maybe support whatever he was doing, because he had a huge family and everything. But my question is to you, my favorite boxer will always be Rocky Marciano. And they did that goofball fight, that computer fight between him and Ali many, many years ago, and Marciano won. What would your feeling be? Now, I know Ali had the reach. Obviously, he was a dancer. You know, he could hit. He had some sting in his punches. But anything I've ever read and watched with Marciano, once he got inside, he was just devastating. What do you think would ever happen if those two...
Oh, geez, that's a hard one to call, isn't it? That is a hard one to call. I think Ali was probably, you know, I think his footwork was probably a bit better. I'd shade it to Ali. I'd shade it to Ali. I think back on the Ali thing, I think that, yeah, he definitely, you know, on reflection, you know, he boxed too long. I think the Holmes fight, wasn't it? The Holmes fight was kind of the nail in the coffin, really, wasn't it?
I think that
fight was really sad when you watch back that fight and you've seen such a really strong, powerful boxer, and he took so much damage in that last fight. And I think that was, you know, it was the final nail. I think it was, he had gone, maybe it was financial reasons, you know, this that he had to box on. And I think that it was a pity that it ended that way with him. You know, it was a pity that ended that way with him, you know, and he wouldn't have been remembered for some of his earlier fights, even though he always will be, like, but it was just the end was sad in terms of how it happened with him.
Well, and a lot of times the end is what sticks in your mind, because, I mean, you think about, you know, they used to run his fights here all the time, and, I mean, that guy was in wars, man. Yeah. I mean, Kenny Norton and Joe Frazier and Larry, or George Foreman, I mean, you know, even though, you know, he took a lot of beatings, man, and it was like, you don't realize the amount of stuff. I mean, these guys are getting punched in the head, I mean, brain, you know, constantly.
And they're just fights, you know. That's not you know, to take into account the training and the sparring, and you know, it's hours and hours and hours of contact, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, eventually, as a young man, you might be able to absorb a lot of it, but as you start moving into your late 20s and 30s, then, you know, are you going to be able to answer the bell at that point?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know what it is. I think it was a different era. I always wanted to see. I would have always loved to see Mike Tyson in that era.
Oh yeah, well, yeah.
You know, you imagine him mixing up with you know, Frazier, Ali, Kenny Norton, any of those, you know, any of those big names. Even the guys that weren't well known were still good fighters, and it would have been real interesting, because we always like to compare eras, and everybody will say, well, they're real different, but. It'd be an interesting thing just to see it once. You know, that's why I loved when Rocky Balboa, the last movie, I think that was in 2006 or 7, and, you know, he comes out and he just does a sparring exhibition, and, you know, you hear the promoter and the manager of the gentleman he's going to fight, and, you know, the guy who says right to him as Balboa gets up and walks away from him, he said, you know, this bastard would have killed him in his prime. You know, and it's just kind of an interesting thing how the old athlete that can still bring it, man, maybe they're not going to obviously be able to beat a champion that's 25 years younger than them. But, you know, it's a pretty interesting concept. And, you know, that was one of the things that they said in the movie.
Yeah. We do that with all sport, don't we? It's interesting. Yeah. You know, we always compare the Jesse Owens to the Carl Lewis to the Usain Bolts. Yep. You know, it's... to get those comparisons to see which generation or which era were the best. But I still think that, in my opinion, we definitely, you know, all aside, I think that athletes nowadays, they're definitely, you know, more conditioned, but there's also such an area of skepticism when someone does something really elite, you know.
And we know with baseball, with all the steroid scandals and everything else, and I would like to think that there's legitimate guys still out there. Now, I was watching the Yankees last night. That Trout from the Angels there, Mike Trout, the guy is just unbelievable. And, I mean, he's only in his early 20s now, and what an athlete. And I'm like, you know, it's going to be guys like that. I mean, there's no dirt on any of them yet. And they might be able to really become – signature for baseball again, because, you know, let's face it, all these sports have really taken a black eye now. I don't know about over in Ireland, but, you know, if you follow American football here, everything's concussions now.
Yeah.
Adrian, this is the point I got right now, where I got a lot of contention with sports is, and I don't watch a lot of sports. I watch baseball now and then when I really feel like I can sit down and watch it. I like hockey. I love watching the old World's Strongest Man, even though it's been moved to CBS now. But it's a real hard thing to find. You know, there's no announcements. You're flipping through. All right, maybe we hit one with Kazmaier in the early 80s. You know, I mean, stuff like that. But the thing right now is everything now, it just seems to be getting, I don't know, the aggression they want to take out of it. They don't, you know, they don't want anybody getting hurt, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I hate to break it to you. In all sports, the chances of getting hurt are very real. Now, I'm not saying cover things up or excuse that type of behavior at the top levels, but man, oh man, the more you keep watering sports down, someone's going to find something else to do. You know, there's going to be another CrossFit out there, or there's going to be another football league started, whether it survives or not, or like with you with rugby and all that, people are going to go and find it no matter what. So, I'm very drawn you know, between, you know, are you going to kind of keep it the way it was, or now because of this, that, and the other thing, and it's very publicized now, and people are all coming out, how much are we going to change the sport to accommodate that? So,
it's something that's very big in rugby circles at the moment, you know, the whole concussion thing. Like, if you look at a rugby match from the 1970s and look at a rugby match now, there is such a clear division between the size of the athletes, you know, where the guys that we're producing now are bigger, faster, stronger, and more athletic. Now, some say that the skill levels aren't as good as they were back then simply because it's gone so physical. And with that, there's no doubt about it. There is a high level of concussions now. You know, where it's going to go, I don't know. You know, it's going to be 5-6 years down the line. I think a lot is you're going to see an awful lot more long term injuries. But I think the real problem, even from the rugby circles, is that these guys are getting so big, so young. You know, like, you know, at 15, 16, they are big. You know, 200-pound beasts. They are big men, and you know, there's no such thing as looking for a window or a door to run through. They're trying to run through walls all the time.
And then, you see that with World's Strongest Man. You know, you got Brian Shaw from here, half Thor from Iceland, and you know, let's face it, Zivikas is still the man at mid to late 30s right now, and you know, he's huge, but you know, they're like, well, he's only 6'4". I'm like, only 6'4"? I mean, you know, you're talking Shaw and Half Thor at 6'9", well over 400. The problem is with that, these guys have been dominant, but, you know, I wish I could remember the gentleman from Lithuania, because he's, you know, he's from the same country as, I'm trying to think, he's from the same place as Zivikas, and I can't remember, but when he was in the Arnold this year, I want to say he came in third, I think. Now, this is what's so strange about it, because everybody's so, you know, fixated on how tall and how heavy you are. I think he was only like 5'10", 5'11". He was like 320. Damn it, I wish I could think of his name, but he's been an outstanding athlete. It's just, I think he's had some lower back problems the last few years. So I don't know what the norm is going to be eventually, but I do agree. Everybody thinks bigger is better. We got to get the bigger athlete out on the field at any cost, no matter what. But I think there's going to come a point where, I mean, how much more can you produce? How much bigger can these athletes get? And what is going to happen when they get this big and there's collisions? Because you and I both know these collisions, they're hitting each other full force. Are they going to eventually just start killing each other on the field? Yeah. Then that's when they're going to have to make decisions and stuff of that nature. But I hope it never comes to that. But I think now we're too much worrying about, well, how much can you lift, or how big are you, or how heavy are you? Because I've seen some lifters that were not, you know, 400-pound guys that were incredible. You know, the way I look at it, Adrian, is anybody can win on any day. That's my philosophy.
I agree. And I think that, you know, in the last perhaps, say, 10 years, the, you know, strength and conditioning has come into not even professional sport, but amateur sport at a high level. You know, we know that it's a numbers game, and strength and conditioning coaches are pushing numbers, so it's lifts. And, like, I think it's kind of generally agreed that perhaps the best guys in the gym doesn't really correlate with the best players, you know. So
I agree.
Yeah, like, I think the guys with the biggest numbers and the guys who run the gym leaderboards aren't exactly the guys who excel on the field. I think that that's kind of a given, you know. But I think that the one thing every player has 100% control over is how he can physically prepare himself. So I think that all these guys are arriving on game day well prepared, big, fast, and strong. And you know, that's where we are at the moment. And I think that in itself, it's a good thing, because, you know, I suppose it's just validating the point that, you know, if you put the work in, you can get really good results. But the other side of that is, from a sporting context, it does mean that perhaps we are losing the skill element of some sports.
Perhaps,
I think so. Perhaps we're losing that And, you know, it does mean that where is it going to go in 4 years? Where is it going to go in 5 years? Where are we going to be in 10 years? And I think that it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But with some sports, it is kind of scary to see where it's going to go as well.
Well, you know, they always preach team, but I think they produce individuals now more than anything. And we also see with these coaches, you know, they're looking to go to the next level. So the pressure is on them not only to win and create a winning program, but, you know, a lot of these guys, whatever level. Now, my brother-in-law is head football coach for the varsity here in a big suburban school. And you hit it right on the head again. You know, there they are. They're using all the components like I use, or they're using in the NFL or whatever. You know, flipping the tires, farmers walks. They can't go stone carries, obviously, because of everything's litigation now.
Yep.
Sandbags and all. So they've taken the culture of the program and built it around, you know, the typical stuff in the gym, the typical football drills, all that, obviously, too. But they've taken another element of strongman and have adapted it to their program. I want to just state this, and then I want your opinion, obviously. I'm a guy that doesn't believe that you need to be doing a billion things. I'm a guy that likes to take a few things and get really, really good at them. And then if we decide we're going to put something else into the program, we're going to develop that too. I watch a lot of high school football. I like to watch it. I've gone out and watched my brother-in-law's team practice and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I like to go out on YouTube and look at various, you know, schools and stuff. One thing I do notice, I feel a lot of these programs are very overburdened. I don't think, you know, I'm talking from a strongman side of the fence too. Why do you need to be doing multiple things for the legs when you could maybe cut them down to two really good things, with your explosiveness, you know, your endurance, and you can build, you know, as we know, squatting is still to me the king. You know, you can build a beastly set of legs, hips, the whole thing, lower back. What do you think it is? Or maybe you think that they should do it. What is your take on, you know, you've been around it, you train people, you've seen it. Do you feel there's just a little bit too much going on, especially at the lower levels? You know, let's look at high school, for instance. Do they need all this stuff they're doing? And a lot of it, I feel, is redundant, even though it's a different movement or whatever. What's your feeling on that, Adrian?
Yeah, I think that, but it comes definitely at the lower levels. I think that, you know, unfortunately, we kind of rate the effectiveness on some illogical things, like its ability to create fatigue, its ability to create soreness, and how novel it is and how much you sweat. Okay, so
yep.
I think that at the lower levels, you know, coaches feel they feel compelled to YouTube the latest cool novel drill, go pulling a truck around a yard, and, you know what I mean, if it creates a lot of stress on the body, if it creates a lot of fatigue, if it's novel, and if people are sore afterwards, it's a tap in the back, we've achieved.
Yeah.
And it's totally illogical thinking, you know. I think that's at a lower level. I 100% agree with you. I think that I like to get good with a couple of different movement patterns and work different variations of those patterns instead of throwing in like 10, 12 different movements. Like, our bodies will adapt to whatever stimulus we place in it, you know. So like we said a while ago, if you sit around all day and you make poor nutritional choices, then you'll become a physical manifestation of that, essentially, okay? But I also do agree that, or I do feel that, you know, sometimes we nearly create motor morons as well, you know. You know, it's just like deadlift, back squat, push and a pull, and that's it. I really do think that when it comes to strength and conditioning, or even just general population, we should try to create motor geniuses, you know. So what I like to do is, I still think that the deadlift gives you a really strong base for strength. I really do think that, like, we program deadlifting in quite a bit. Front squat, back squats, some split squats, some single leg work, and that's our lower body work. Some accessory lifts, but that makes up the basis of our lower body work. In between that, like resting sets, we do like to do like little juggling blocks, little balance blocks, because I do think that you need that, you know, you need to have a really strong motor capacity. especially if your sport requires a high skill level. So I'm a strength and conditioning coach for a sport called hurling, right? So when, yeah. when you're finished this podcast, you should Google hurling, right? And watch some YouTube clips. It's a really high skill sport, okay, where you have a stick and a ball, and it requires a tremendous amount of balance, coordination, and skill, as well as, obviously, physical attributes like strength and endurance and speed and acceleration. But I really do think with a lot of strength and conditioning programs that are written for hurling, they are written to design motor morons. I really do believe that. I think that, you know, the sport is really high-skilled, and I do think that your strength and conditioning program should reflect that. Now, I don't mean that we're looking for really novel, back to what I said day one, looking to do bloody pistol squats, stuff, right. Swiss balls, really stupid stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, we do program in the Olympic lifts. I think they're important, just from a power standpoint, also from a motor skill standpoint. Essentially, how we program is vertical pull, vertical push, horizontal pull, horizontal push, a knee bend exercise and a hip hinge exercise. Basis.
Hey. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the basis is deadlift is our base of strength. We do program in some gymnastics work to a point, so like skin the cats. We do.
Yeah.
Like it's just low level ring work now because, you know, I do, like, I'm 100% aware and acutely aware that I may only have 1 hour, 1 hour, 20 minutes gym time with the guys every week as well. So,
You got to get it all kind of compacted. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. So it might be a 6 or 7 minute block, but again, we're working different skills incorporated into what we're doing. But I 100% agree with you. It's not about having 100 different exercises, it's about having the blocks of 5 to 6 really strong movement patterns and different variations of them and get really good at them.
No, I agree. And I got two questions for you. First one, when we were talking just briefly on Olympic lifting, I've had this discussion with many people. I think Olympic lifting went down the wrong path when they took the overhead press out of the game. And I heard, you know, I've gotten into this with a lot of people. And I think it was more of a political thing at the time, but do you feel that, that really took away from the sport when they dropped the overhead?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I agree 100%.
I mean, the clean and jerk, let's face it, that's one of the most powerful movements on earth. But to me, I think that the press really separates the boys from the men. I always thought that. And the other question I got, too, is obviously with everything you've done, you know, mentally you've got to be like a piece of iron. What do you when people come into your gym, obviously, and we already kind of we hit on this briefly, because a lot of the guys on here, Mike Gillette, who's a regular on here, trains a lot of girls in gymnastics. And we got into this one day, he and a bunch of us, about how a lot of these kids, because they're younger, and I know this isn't everybody, but there's a lot of bad trainers out there. And they get a hold of these kids, and they figure because they're 12, 13, 14 years old, they can just beat the life out of them, and they can take it. Now, a younger body that hasn't been just busted up for the last 10 or 15 years, obviously, is probably going to recover quicker and take it. But we see a lot of injuries in these sports, a lot of kids that are being forced into it by their parents because they live vicariously through these kids. And the worst thing I've seen with this stuff is the mental trashing they do, where they're expected at a high, to perform at a high level all the time. Maybe they don't feel like it. Maybe they're hurting, but they always do this. And I don't think people recognize what can be done to a young person, whether it's a male or female, mentally, where you can destroy them because they, you know, say they do get hurt and they just can't come back, or just say they don't like it and they can't come back, and the constant push and push and push. Obviously, I'm sure you've seen a lot of this. You've probably had athletes that's come to you that have just been beaten down so hard. How do you handle that, Adrian? How would you try to bring this kid back where whether they want to compete or not, they just want to become productive again and not be constantly just throttled all the time. And I think that's a big problem we got nowadays, especially here in the United States, because it's all or naught now. And I go to these games and listen to these parents out on the bleachers where they're literally almost fist fighting now, and there has been altercations like that, and then they wonder why the kid's having all types of problems. So what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that, just to go back on the start of what you opened a bit, like, you know, like coaches beating people down, and it's, I think that that's where coming back to a set of core values is really powerful, because if someone comes to my gym, for example, and they tell me that they have a specific nutrition issue, I'm not a nutritionist, I'm not a dietitian. Yeah. I'm not going to tell that person or give that person advice. I outsource that. If that's above my skill set, I will straight away say, this isn't what I do. Here's a number for someone who eats, sleeps, and breathes this stuff. You go ring them. And I think that, that back to a set of core values, I think that if that honesty is there within the fitness industry as a whole, I think we would be in a way better place. We wouldn't have to pay excessive rates for insurance. It's the people who do that that give all of us a bad name. You know, it's just that bit of honesty to say, I'm not an Olympic lifting coach. Go to an Olympic lifting gym where they eat, sleep, and breathe that stuff, and you will progress and develop a lot faster. I think that that just goes back to that. In terms of dealing with someone who's already beat down, I really think that you have to give someone a task that builds them up. You know, and this is back to kind of what I was saying all the time. We feel that we constantly have to beat down, beat down, beat down. But any program should be, it shouldn't be about beating someone down all the time. It should be building them up, building them up. So I'll give you a simple example, and I've referred to it a couple of times. Like, take juggling. So if a child comes in and they're tired, they're beat up, their parents are living their lives or their sporting careers through their kids, right? Yep. It's a really hard conflict, because you might get that, you might get that. And I don't train kids, but I do see it with teenagers. I don't necessarily see it with kids. But I've seen teenagers completely change by giving them a simple task like juggling, because you cannot change physically without first changing mentally. You know, you're a different person when you acquire a skill like that. And, you know, what you see is when you teach someone how to juggle, for example, okay, so a child who has been beat down for 6 months, they have X amount of injuries, they are tired, they just need a break, and you say, right, you have 2 weeks, we're going to work on some juggling patterns they've never juggled in their life.
Yep.
Fair enough from a physical standpoint, and what you can see is someone who's juggling three balls in the air. But what you don't see, what you don't see is the fact that you have unlocked new levels of self-belief, new levels of commitment, new levels of self-awareness, new levels of confidence, and you're building that person up again as opposed to breaking them down. And I think that, I know I've referred to juggling a couple of times, you know, there's a community of coaches that I work with called the Real Movement Project, really inspired coach called Keegan Smith that I do some work with, and I really have to give him a shout out here, because in terms of my development, he has helped me come so far. And you know, I think that it's fitting that I recognize him and that I give him a shout out on the podcast. And he has done so much in this line, and he has taught me so much in terms of this as well. And I think that, you know, it just comes back to what I said a while ago. It comes back to those core values. It comes back to the coach having core values, and it comes back to the parent having those core values as well. And, you know, if you're coaching through them and if you're parenting through them, then the child or the athlete will adopt and buy in and take ownership of those values as well.
No, and I agree with that. You know, it's an amazing thing, and a lot of us wouldn't even, you know, admit to it. For as much as we've done and what we know, it's amazing when you meet people like that gentleman you just spoke about and myself. We, you know, people understand, we're all teachers. And I'm telling you right now, I never say no to listening to somebody that I feel has got the credentials and the respect, because none of us know everything and we're never going to know everything. And it's... I tried anytime, like even with you today. I mean, this is the first time Adrian and I have done a show, and I'm learning stuff right here talking with him. This is the value of what we do. And, you know, you're talking standards, you're talking, you know, building your identity, building your self-confidence, coming back from the ashes when everybody else counted you down. You know, they can phrase anything they want, but the bottom line is I believe life is very simplistic. You have your family, you have your standards you live by, and the rest, man, is just up to you and what you want to do. The problem is where we live today is this. They make everything complicated. They make everything a chore. They make everything where, okay, well, we've got the solution. Well, maybe they do. But, you know, as I've gone to seminars and I've heard these gentlemen speak that are all high-end, they say, you know, people spend thousands of dollars for a few days with us. They'll buy thousands of dollars worth of products. They get them home. They never even take the wrapper off the product. Okay, so literally, to me, when you walk out that door, you've pretty much surrendered again. And that's a thing that we've got to get away from. That's a thing that we've got to eliminate. And strong minds and strong bodies can't be exaggerated more and more. And that was one of the reasons why I did the show, Adrian. I felt there was a niche not only in the community we live in, but my whole thing I always wanted to do was this. Not only did I want to offer solutions, but like when I said to you, I loved the Hulk as a kid, I used to sit there as a kid and think, what would I ask Bill Kazmaier if I met him? You know, yeah. What would I do, you know, with some of the older guys you read about, like, you know, the big guys in when Perry Rader had Iron Man, and you had all these different, whether it was Reg Park or, you know, Chuck Sipes or any of these guys, and the writing was so inspirational, and when you read it and you said, damn it, I can do it. It's not like the stuff you see today. It's like, well, you can't do this. I don't want to hear that stuff anymore. And the pet peeve I've got more than anything is if someone will come up to me and say, I'll try it, that's the end of you and I. I those words I despise, because if you're only trying it, you sure as hell aren't into it. So yeah. I feel myself I have an obligation to not only the listeners, but to anybody that wants to learn this, and the people we bring in here, like I said in the beginning, are by far the best in this industry. That's all we have here. We all circle the wagon, and as I call us, we are one big family. But, you know, you and I are very much on the same page with stuff. What, you know, this is a message we can get out. I mean, you know, we can all write books, we can all put DVDs out, we can all do this, but this has got the reach now. I mean, look, I'm talking to you and you live in Ireland. I mean, think about that right now. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. What do you think? I mean, the show, everything we've talked to this point, do we got the reach? Do we got the expertise? Do we have the people out there where we can go and start capturing, whether it's the young kids, which we know we got to grab hold of more now than ever, but we've got a lot of the 25 to 45-year-old sector out there that are banging their heads against the wall. And, of course, you've got the older people, which I've coached here too. So where are we right now, and what do you think we need to do to get ourselves out there even more and get more people involved?
Yeah, I think our message is very powerful. I think our message is very important. I think our message is something that the world really needs. And we know that now. You know, we know that, you know, across the board, from an obesity standpoint, from a physical development standpoint, we are not where we should be. We are regressing, and we have lost what got us here in the first place. You know, we are losing it. We are losing it. We are evolving into a weaker, more fragile specimen, and there is no doubt about that. We are getting sicker, we are more obese, we need the voices, we need to hear this, and the world needs to hear this. How do we get it out there? Like social media platforms, like, let's face it, Facebook, for 90% of the population, it can be the greatest waste of time, you know, but it is a really unique platform. Social media is a really unique platform. Technology is a really, really unique platform to get our message out there. And I think this podcast is fantastic.
Thank you.
You know, it opens up so many doors, you know, and as you say, like, we're two different time zones, thousands and thousands of miles away. we're talking like we're sitting across the table having a cup of tea together, you know, which is
fantastic. It is. And, you know, it's like you and I are right in the same room, like, you know, and I mean, who would ever think I'm in the United States, I'm in upstate New York, and you're in Ireland. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And that's where technology is a blessing, but on the other side, it is a curse. And it's really not only making people, in a lot of ways, they don't communicate verbally anymore. You know, it's easier. I mean, some things we have to do, email, Facebook, yeah, it's a blessing. But on the other hand, we are de-evolving. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, getting sicker, getting lazier, can't take any of the heat. It's got to be instant gratification, like you were saying. And what it's doing, it's pulling us down more and more. And really, it's bringing us more to like a low ball level with everything. And, you know, you and I and anybody that's associated here and our friends and all that, see, the problem I have is I don't run at that level. So I'm always going to kind of try to offer a solution or maybe say, well, just go try this. But on the other hand, it can twist my tiger tail, and that's when I get very upset about it, because it's like, why do you want to live at a lower level? Why do you want to have lower standards? Why is it like, well, they'll give me this, and I'm okay with it? That's not the way to live. That's not the way to conduct yourself. And one thing I always say is, and unfortunately it's not always in the positive light, there's always somebody watching you. And you, when you conduct yourself in a positive fashion, that's a good thing. But if you're not going to, that can work against you. And as you and I both know, as business owners, we do have to operate in a certain way, especially when you're out in public. Now, you don't have to be an angel by any means, but when you have, you know, your fitness company there, or my, you know, my barbell and podcast show, you've got a lot to lose there. Yeah. And, you know, get in some trouble, and that can really hurt you bad. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, you can have all the media, everything you want, but I know more people will tell me the same thing. Word of mouth will kill you. It will bury you if you just screw up one time. So, you know, I feel very obligated to conduct myself in the best manner I can when I'm outside. Of course, I slip up like anybody, but I feel you know, when we're talking standards, when we're talking about raising the bar, we need people like us for the other ones to look up to and want to emulate, that want to get better, that don't want to just sit in a cubicle or, you know, have somebody treat them like they're a ball of dirt and you know, we pay you so you're going to take it, or, you know, and they go home and the family life's not real good. The kids are all over them. They've got to, you know, how many kids now? Every kid's got to play a sport. Every kid's got to play piano. Every kid's got, I got no problem with that. I think you should develop yourself as much. But you know something? Sometimes you need to put the brakes on and just enjoy one another, enjoy your life. And I think we're sorely missing a lot of that now. And just the idea where, you know, I've gone to restaurants before, and there'll be a couple there. The phones will be out. Now, I don't know if they're texting each other or they're texting somebody else, but that'd be the day you did that to me, because I'd get up and leave. You know, etiquette, decorum, you know, just things like that. So, you know, that's how I kind of see things right now, and we do have the ability to change it. Even if we get one or two out of the 10, that's a big plus right there. So, Adrian, we're at the end of the show. Summarize anything you want. You know, I'm not rushing you off. Answer anything you want there. Give out all your information, your website. I'll give mine. And if you'd hang on the line, please, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Eric, thank you very much for having me. It was really an honor to be able to talk and reach a wider community of people, and especially your following, because I know they have the same mindset, same standards, and same values as us. Again, the social media plug, so just O'Brien.fitness is my website. On Instagram, it's Team OBF, and on Facebook, it's O'Brien Fitness and Performance. And thank you very much for having me.
It was my pleasure, man. I could talk to you for another hour, but this is Motivation Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com. Athlete's Choice, that's Steven Santangelo. Primal Creations at AOL.com. Facebook, STEPHEN.SANTANGELO.75. Don't forget, the Bull Moose Bar, go out to AtomicAthletic.com. It's on sale to the 13th of June for $269. As I said before, it's 58 pounds, and its length is 84 7/16, and it's one hell of a beast of a bar. Especially if you had any bicep issues, this will change the whole scope of everything. So go out to AtomicAthletic.com and check that out. Tell Roger we sent you. FiorelloBarbellCo.com, our free ebook, Top 10 Ways to Build Mind and Muscle. 10 basic paragraphs, that's what we were talking about today. You don't have to complicate things, but you do have to commit to things, and you do have to have standards, and you do have to have things to live up to. Go out and check that out. Also, too, on FiorelloBarbellCo.com, Strength Times Power Equals Success in the Winner's Circle. Those programs are all created here. We've done stuff with weight loss, with Strength Times Power. The Winner's Circle are all modules of me speaking. I mean, we get in everything from sandbags to stone carries to the high shrugs to the old New York barbell iron boots. You know, these are life changers. So go out and check those all out at FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Also, too, FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. iTunes and Stitcher, give us a 5-star review. That's what everybody's giving us, and I appreciate that. Also, too, if you like Adrian and I do a show, because we're going to hope we can get him back, send an email to me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.R.com, and I'll leave you with these 5 things. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to give them a little word of either inspiration. You can always teach. That's what we were talking about, being teachers today. Whether we teach it, Adrian's been talking to me, I'm learning stuff off him. I hope he got something off me. And this is what it's all about. Pass it on. Pass it on. We don't own the information. Help somebody out. So think about that when you're approached. Also, too, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to somebody or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. Also, too, if you're going to go out and lift today, bend it, crush it, press it, pull it, squat it, whatever you want to do. If you're going to lift stones, turn them into dust. And as our great Hoosa Steel Crusher Stone says in blood red, domination. We are domination. We don't follow anyone's path. We clear cut our own. And as I say on everything I write now, dominate, obliterate, and dent everything in your path. Dominate is to dominate everything you do. In the weight room, in your personal life, et cetera, et cetera. Obliterate those goals and get ready for the next big one. And if you have one of those days where it just isn't going right, put the biggest dent you can in it, because you're going to come back the next day and take it out. So those 3 words are vital. Also, as we always say, no one's ever going to clip our balls. And as Russell Fur says, who's been listening to the show from the beginning, who will be on here Saturday morning, and this is another gentleman that we really put on the right road. He's going to talk about power rack training, what an influence it's been on us, on he, and you know me, I'm a big power rack guy, and he's going to have a program for the beginner. And as he says, when I listen to your shows, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. That was one of the nicest things that anybody's ever said to me, and we will say that for the next 30 years, Russell. Adrian, thanks for being on the show, man. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have a gentleman like you on, sir.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Eric.
You're welcome. Before we sign off, I just want to say this. Don't stand on the side of the road and watch the world go by. Obviously, be a steward of strength and tell 100 of your friends, because we're coming for you anyways. And that's just the way it is. So, for Adrian O'Brien, this is Eric Fiorello. I want to thank everybody for listening. We will have this gentleman back on, and we'd like to make him a regular on here. We'll talk about that offline here. But remember this, go out and do something better than anybody else, and always, always be a steward of strength. Thanks, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. Have a great day and a great week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.